locate herself here at Cornell. You know, one of the things I said at the Harvard thing, it's time for us to stop being naive and stop getting here and saying, oh, it's different. We already know it's going to be different. The question is, what kind of strategies do we need to develop before we come that allow us to make fruitful use of the experience of being here? Anne, were you trying to jump in? Anne. Well, girl, you're talking to me. Girl?
Just a brief response or piece of advice from Maya Angelou, who
Maya
very presence and her politics in life. She says, black women cannot afford, she said, modesty is not what it is. She said, humility, yes, but modesty is, you know, like under a veil, a bushel. And I'll just get Maya saying it eloquently. But that, that we have no reason, that modesty is something for white middle class ladies who can get what they need and want anyway, and so can afford to be retired. But Maya, in her whole presence, shows us that that whereas humility is appropriate, whatever you have, you need to assert in order to share it and in order to explain. That's my comment.
Okay.
You know, and just pick up a little bit on what you said, and basically also respond to you. And again, address myself. I know why I do this all the time, well, this today, but I really want to address myself to this space and to Cornell. I think that one of the things we're hearing is I don't want to recenter. I think Gloria's right when she talks about black women and women of color agency and the need to assert certain positions and take up certain voices strategically. But I think it would be wrong if we kept personalizing it and individualizing it, or even talking about it as it's located only in us as a people, quote unquote. In other words, it seems to me the responsibility of all the people here who are your teachers to listen to what's being said.
Talk about it, girl.
Okay, and therefore to respond in terms of actually not just including you, but being able, I mean, one of the reasons you can't speak, it seems to me, is because your teacher doesn't know how to ask you to speak as well.
Or demand that you
or
speak.
Or demand that you speak.
I'm objecting as a teacher and as a black woman raised in black traditions.
Tradition
of modesty, not pulling any attention to yourself, allowing for others, and so on. There's a way in which we assume the dominant model of agency and assertion is verbalization, right? Is like Maya, you know, being sort of out there standing up and attracting attention and then acting within that aura. From doing field work in the rural South, I find that women I work with have another model of agency that did not have to do with talking about the I all the time, talking about my suffering, you know, what happened to me. Not assuming that that's everything people want to know about. And if there's a real, I think, interesting piece that was in the Village Voice about the African-American domestics who lamented the egotism of their mistresses, of their employers, always wanting to know about what I thought about me and wanting me to listen to them and about what they thought. And I just think that perhaps we shouldn't assume that that model is the one where agency is located. That I want you to keep some of your modesty. I mean, if that's what's you, I mean, I'd like to keep some of my modesty, some of my reserve. I don't want people to know everything about me. I don't want, you know what I mean? And I don't see that as sort of opting out.
Well, Gertrude, so then we can talk about different kinds of agency. And
right.
And different agency in different places. But Gayatri would like to say something, but she has to catch her plane. And we would like to hear from her. And then we'll come back to this issue because I think it's very relevant.
I would like to speak to my friend from Nigeria who spoke up. I would like to say this. You know, sometimes when we think, or I see seen this happen many times. When one says Africa, quite often, in the rush of talking about ourselves, we forget that, and this happened with India too, but much more of that, and I've seen this on many occasions, we forget that Africa is a place with universities and so on. So when you say colonialism, cultural imperialism, immediately one thinks of something else. So if you don't mind, I want to give just my answer to the question that you asked that we are not considering. And I speak about my conversations with three people, three Nigerians. One of them is Benedict Owusalu, who was teaching at the time that I knew him at the University of Zambia, where I was his guest. The other is Chinwezu, the man associated with the Lagos Guardian. And the third one is my very dear friend, Michael Achiruo, who was a graduate student with me at Cornell, and then was in the Biafran Army, and then came back recently, and we spoke again. We've been in touch over the years. And then I would like to say just one word about deconstruction to you, personally. It seems to me that, you know, when I was in Zambia, Benedict asked me to come and sit in on his class, and he was teaching Things Fall Apart. And he said to me, pointing at the shacks as we were going up in his car to the university, to his classroom, that this is not really United States classroom, you know. The boys I'm teaching are in fact from these places and we're living in that context. And he was teaching, and he was a very careful teacher. And Echidu, as you know, at the time, the University of Ghana, as he was the vice chancellor of the new Igbo State University. Anyway, so I went to them, into them, discussed his teaching very carefully with a lot of passion, and then there was a phone call. But you know, I've also been a student of English in a colonized country, in a university, so I could think of these. I know how the teacher and the student relates in that context. He went off to answer a telephone call. So I asked the young men in the class, well, do you like this one? And there was a lot of eye movements. I was their teachers. Yes, they were not going to answer. So I said to them, I won't tell. I won't tell. Of course I'm telling, but you don't know them. And they said, one and all. I said, what do you like? What do you like? And this also took some time, and I won't force an answer. So I was simply smiling, and I knew I seemed like no foreign lady was forcing them to answer a question, but after a while they saw that I was smiling and whatever, and they said one after the other, the Godfather. This is in that classroom. I'm going to draw this back. Then I got continuism in a situation quite like this, a virulent attack on what is called post-structuralism from basically a Levi-side position, which is identified as an African position. And last, 2 weeks ago, at Jiro and I were speaking, we were talking about, and then I came back, Skip Gates was present, and I said, Skip, you know, you should write a little something about why we ex-colonials quite often think about the natural position as a position which is like an alibi, which our educated classes learned to recognize as nature, which really has rather little to do with the price of eggs, and see how this opposition develops. And in fact, Skip told me, I don't think he's actually done anything about that, but he's going to do something about this construction of what is naturally Indian or naturally African when this divisiveness operates. And so I would say, and now I'm being very disloyal to my own university, where I didn't learn deconstruction, because that was before the time. I was a student here a long time ago, but also to my colleagues and friends here, deconstruction for men's side is not the only thing that exists.
Wait.
I would also say this, that when, and now I'm going to talk just a little bit about deconstruction. Remember what Atebe himself said. People say, these theories do not come trademarked. One uses them. When told that you people didn't invent the telephone, does that mean you can't use the telephone? And now I want to say a small thing about deconstruction, and since the thing that I said to Gloria about, as a teacher I know that there can be no learning when the team is not prepared, was part of a very private conversation non-central public space, I don't like you talking about these things, but I think I am going to say what that conversation was. It was a conversation with my mother. It was a conversation with my mother about death. My mother is 75 years old and has had cancer. I was telling her this very recently, and the word field that I was using is not an academic field. The word field, in speaking in my unrelated language, the word field is kshetra. I'm not at all a religious person, but that word exists in Indic scriptures, and it's used also in my native language. The word is kshetra in Bengali, and it means field in the sense of a field to plow, right? And what I was saying to her was this, that as, now, when our parents die, as I say, I'm not religious, but the word that is inscribed in my religion for the death of a parent is Mahaguru Nipat. That is to say, the destruction of a great instructor, okay? And the word for teacher that I was using was not guru, though that word has been soiled. And the word that I was using for teacher was shikshak, which is like a teacher by profession. So I was telling my mother that when my father died, you know, and speaking to a mother close to death about your father's death is a little bit different. And when my father died in 1955, although I think of my father every day, and although I thought when I looked at his dead face at that time, that in fact all the writing of expression on his face had been taken, smoothed out, and he was looking beautiful as his brother and my cousins were ready to take him on their shoulders and take him to the firing hut, I did not learn anything about death. On the other hand, very recently, a young friend, James Snee, died. A young friend, Joel Feynman, died. And my closest friend, whose name I won't mention because I'm now invading her privacy, I'm talking to my mother. And my closest friend's mother, who's 93 years old, died. Now, I shared with my closest friend this while her mother was dying. She was senile by then. My friend in New York was holding her mother's hand as her mother was dying and also calling me, all right? And so I said, and this closest friend I've only known for 6 years. So I said to my mother that, you know, because the field was not prepared, and this is what I know as a teacher, I could not learn the meaning of dying when my father died, and now these strangers' deaths, I never even saw that mother or my closest friend, the death of James Sneed, the death of Joel Feynman, and the death of my friend's mother, whom I never saw, in fact, have taught me something about dying, because the field is now prepared. That's what I said. Now, I'm coming to deconstruction. I was able to say to my friend, Laura, whoever you are now, I was able to say to her friend, as her mother was dying, and then she called me again next morning, just after her mother had died, I was able to say to her friend that when your mother gave you birth, you were inscribed in her body. That's what I was saying last night. According to the rules of the species. And she allowed you, by working through that inscription, to enter the world. When we die, we are inscribed once again. We do our dying according to the way in which our body is inscribed, and then we are inscribed into nature. And you holding her hand were allowing her to move into that inscription from the limited area of personal experience. This, to an extent, I was able to say, as I said in my book, that without deconstruction there would be no other words for me. This I was able to say to her because, in fact, I'm using the telephone rather than just looking at it as a vocabulary to describe what I'm reading in my class. It's a transformative use of a very powerful theory, not just a descriptive use. And I would say to you, from that point of view, that when you think of that kind of use, the fact that you can't make what you know accessible to you might be an invitation to you to see its use. As a foreign student at Cornell, who wanted to come to Cornell for some reason, that's what you want. I would say that perhaps one of the things that we can do best is to transform these things rather than be completely sure. I'm not able to fix what I think into something that's been taught. It is possible also as a student from outside to think that perhaps I should see if I shouldn't break myself a little and not accept that what is taught at our universities as nature is not in itself something that comes with history attached. I was kind of not completely surprised that when you spoke, everybody was said yes, yes, and then went on to speak about their own problems. Because sometimes these problems just become pious markers with which one just agrees. I hope you don't take this as a bad part, but I really did want to say this very seriously and to explain how much deconstruction can actually teach you and how important that stuff can be. And that when I said that as a teacher, I know that when the field is not prepared, you cannot learn. I was not, in fact, standing in front of a high school audience. I was speaking to my mother about what I was able to learn and apply the lesson of being a teacher to myself. And we were talking about learning the meaning of being alive and dying at the same time.
It's a good thing, I think, that we have
about some problems with deconstruction, Cornell style deconstruction. and therefore then typify a whole continent.
Yes.
And the discourse within that continent about which is profoundly ignorant. And I'm not just saying this to be abusive, because you have to take an active interest in terms of political discourses in Asia, for instance. It doesn't just come to you. It doesn't come to Newsweek or Time. You have to take an active interest, and you do not become a specialist just by becoming an Indologist. You have to take an active interest in terms of the political struggles, the agenda of discourse in those areas, and you simply don't. So there's so much. What I want to say, because there were discussions about the construction yesterday.
But wait, DJ, we really want to end on Black Women's Agency. Because see, this is a problem.
Okay.
I mean,
it's related, and I simply wanted to say that one thing, the relationship, and I wanted to speak to Biggie about this, you know, the question she raised this afternoon, that I've had this spoken to me in class teaching, both at more at Oberlin than at Cornell. That is, you have these markers, almost like the keywords sense that Raymond Williams has talked about culture. And you have these key terms now, race, class, and gender. And you have to construct the content and the structure of your courses around race, class, and gender. And questions get asked, therefore, but what of sexual orientation, what of sexuality? And we'll say, well, gender subsumes that. But
I'm not sure Bill was asking that, but if you don't mind, I have the sense that the space is not, you know, really just the space. I think that there was a sense in which there was space created for certain kinds of voices, and I don't mean just emotive voices now. I mean a certain political space for discussion. And one of the reasons to speak about this is actually about being able to create certain kinds of spaces. And the only reason I interrupted you is I don't think that is really the point at which one should be ending this. And I know Gloria has to leave in a couple of minutes. And I think maybe it's a discussion which must be continued. But
which discussion?
The discussion about how you integrate different kinds of analysis and what that question in fact means. Because I don't think the question was necessarily about just mentioning sexuality. I think that there are ways we can talk about it, but my intervention is that I'm not sure this is the space right now, because I'm concerned about bringing it back.
I would like to say that some of the issues in my little closing words here before we go that we might consider is, one, I think how several individuals have usurped space to deflect attention away from a discourse. Now, I have to say to you, all of you, the Gayatri said to me, I am leaving and I would like to say something. Otherwise, I would not have allowed as a moderator of the discussion. Because at that point, we were talking about Black female agency. It was a very crucial point. Theorizing experience. We weren't just sitting here saying, you know, this is how we feel. You know, in any kind of way that should be dismissed or not thought about. And that is cultural imperialism to reduce our theorizing to this is how we feel. And you get up and you theorize in a language that may not be accessible to that Metacritic or someone. And then they get up and say, you know, you just got up and said how you feel. You know, well, that is a really sad illustration of the very kinds of things we've been trying to talk about here. I think what is joyous is that we have this moment to intervene on that and to remind you to consider the place of Black women, our voices, why it's so easy for people to stand up. I mean, go see how many talks you go to by white men where all of these people jump up to intervene, change the subject, da 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 da. Have a good day. Thank you for coming.